Remember the amendment on the old amendment on page 3 of the bill in section 2 was basically over there, so this act covers all. Where's that amendment? Yeah, all actions for contribution or indemnity filed subsequent to its effective date. And then we were trying to plug in over lines 17, 18, and 19, page 2. An amendment in the proper amendment that we're going to put into this is on page 2, line 18, after the word subsection, delete the word or, and on line 19, delete the word void, and first after the word subsection, and into after the effective date. No, I'm sorry, the word void stays in. And into after the effective date of this act are void. So the whole section will now read, except as provided in paragraph 3 of this subsection, all agrees or warranties contrary to the provisions of the paragraph A of this subsection, and into after the effective date of this act are void. That will handle the problems they were talking about.
Yes, would it be too much to ask somebody to explain this thing one more time?
I will explain it to you. What happens is that if you read something as it's presently written in the bill, it says...
Well, not the amendment. But,
oh, the bill?
Yeah. Okay, so the third party.
Okay.
Yeah. How it affects that relationship.
Okay. If you... The idea of the workers' comp being exclusive remedy is some employers who lead into what they call with indemnification agreements or warning agreements with other third parties. And what happens is that for years, everyone always thought that those claims were barred. And that the claims for the indemnification as far as the working was concerned. And what basically has happened, as I understand, is that the work is injured on the job. And an employer who wants to pay the claim has an agreement with the indemnification or warning agreement with a third party. He then involves himself in litigating those indemnification agreements.
The third party has been the premises. But the owner of the premises are where the workmen are. The company is a person works for without being here.
Yeah,
are we talking about the case, the example of dealing with a cleaner? Worked for ABC Cleaning Company and was doing work on GEF,
that type of situation.
Property, and he got hurt on GEF property.
I think what most people confuse it with is the old joint supervision and control. This is not that. This is the question when there's a warranty out there or an indemnification, a contractual agreement to reimburse another party.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've gotten involved in. And it's a question, basically, it's litigation among the insurance companies. And what happened is that it used to be in the federal law with the longshoremen, this is where you used to see all the claims. In 1972, Congress passed a law prohibiting these. And all of a sudden, in 75, when the Supreme Court case gave the Kaiser Gypsum, that was 75, and they resurrected this concept. And all of a sudden, they're starting to enter into these agreements and litigate on them now. And so what happens is that when the workers' comp claim is ended, that isn't the end of many of these things, it's just the beginning of the litigation.
That's where the employer who was paying the benefits or paying for the insurance
benefits,
then he is taking action against
the benefits,
whatever
it is.
Person who on whose premises the man was hurt.
Well, no, it isn't the premise. The premises don't have anything to do with it. It's the contractual agreement, whether it's first or implied that he had with the third party. Take the, and the reason sub-question B with him is that if I, guys, you were here when the railroads came in, and you know understand what the railroads are. What happens is, I understand the railroads, when they push these cars into these factories or places, industrial stores, that they've got yards out there working, and somebody out there working, maybe it's, I don't know if it's an employee of a company or whatever it is, but the railroads enter into these contractual agreements with these companies on indemnification for any damages or injuries that occur
later.
Is that correct?
So you can have it either way.
Yeah.
When the rules got hurt, then the other, they didn't do it, the other person, the other place was not there.
Yeah,
the railroad.
Yes.
And so that's why they got the public utilities, because they do so much in railroads, because they do so much work on other people.
That's exactly correct. And that's the standard form of contractual agreement they all entered into. And I understand that other utilities are to do the same thing.
I don't know.
And so that's why these are the exceptions to the general rule that we're going to avoid those agreements. All of those that are covered under the subject of regulations for Central Oil 760
and 760. So railroads and utilities will still be able to enter into these agreements?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly correct.
Mr. Chairman, how would that apply to contractors coming in and doing work on someone else's premises, like a painter being hired, a painting subcontractor being hired by ABC Manufacturing Company to repaint the offices?
To my knowledge, I doubt if they entered into those agreements, do they? There's no agreements in that area.
Okay.
There's no something that isn't done.
It justifies where they are and where they
are. Yes, yeah, well, it's a contractual agreement.
Inside or it's just.
Okay. And we're going to open it up and for those in reading.
Is the summary on the scale correct?
Somebody that says that isn't such a good idea.
Oh, well, it sounds like a good idea. It's harder to understand it more than the immediate moment when you're talking about it.
Okay. Bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Bill 301A engrossed on page 2, line 18, after the word subsection, insert the word entered into after the effective date of this act.
So why don't you?
And so the new.
Why don't I put in the 1977 act?
All right.
Okay. The word 1978. Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? So adopted. Bill, why don't you pick up that one on page 3 also? Will you pick that one up? Why don't you pick up that one? Have you done that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
On page 3 of Senate Bill 301A engrossed, I move that be amended on line 6 with the insertion after the word actions of the word for contribution or indemnity, so that the sentence would now read, this act governs all actions for contribution or indemnity filed subsequent to its effective date.
You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection?
No. Is there more to it?
No.
No.
No, that's no amendment.
Okay.
Hearing none, the amendment adopted. Representative Rogers moves Angel Senate Bill 301 as amended to the floor with the B-Pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any? Well, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Adams?
Aye.
Representative
Beeble?
Aye.
Representative Rogers?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm?
Aye.
Chairperson Zulingoff?
Aye.
Any votes, Senate Bill 301 is amended to send to the board and pass recommendation. Send down the
amendment. You want to carry?
Yeah, I'll carry it. The first bill that I'd like to get up on the agenda today is Senate Bill 462. Senator Pierce is going to be here. Are you going to get Senator Pierce first?
Yeah, I want you to find it.
He wants to be here.
I'd be glad to give you a motion on 462.
No, no, I want to hear on 462.
Oh,
I
want
to hear on 462. Do you have a sign of sheet, Dan?
You have them all.
Yeah. I got them. Jerry?
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Christine. I live in Grants Pass, Oregon. I represent the Seniors Union. We're going to come before this morning to strongly support Senate Bill 462. We have a problem in our industry. Of it not being an industry that is very hard to get into, that anybody that wants to buy a ladder and a couple paintbrushes and a paint bucket can get into it. And therefore, in lots of cases, the employers that should be considered legitimate employers in our industry aren't very formal in their relationships with governmental agencies, especially with any legitimate business enterprise. Consequently, we have a good many partnerships, so-called partnerships. And so we really have a problem in our industry of these employers not being competitive. Well, it's not just union employers, but employers in our industry that go to the trouble of setting up payroll accounts, paying up unemployment accounts, and working time accounts. And so any legislation that would help in encouraging employers to be responsible and be fair and to share the cost of the industry in which they choose to work, we think would be a great benefit. So I think with those remarks, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond, but that concludes what I have to say.
Jim.
So here's what I'd like to do. Senator Tia has some amendments. And what I'd like to do is get Senator Tia, and Jerry, I'll call you back after that if you want to listen to the amendments the Senator has. If you want to look at them then, or you can comment on them afterwards. Senator?
Thank you, Chair. My interest in the bill started with one of those bills that became controversial, Senate Bill 430. So I signed, and I wish I hadn't, and I'm sure that never happened to you.
Never.
No. The bill went a lot farther than I wanted to go. We were looking at it from my concept, and the one thing I've been dealing with for about as long as I've been in the Oregon legislature is the trick of people calling themselves independent contractors for the sole purpose of escaping a variety of things, including unemployment and workman's compensation payments. I'm aware of the problem that's been described by the gentleman who was just before you, and the bill you have now narrowed it down to the construction industry. 430 covered a lot more than I wanted to and many other members wanted to, so we're only dealing with the construction industry. I suppose the bill, when it passed the Senate, was aware already that there are still some problems remaining. And I made it a point of my own to see if I couldn't get some appropriate amendments to deal with the subject, talking with the members of the FGL-CIO and the Associated General Contractors. I do have amendments. However, we've been out in the hall talking about them, and we're not sure the amendments do exactly what we want. By that, I mean the language does exactly what we want to do. And so I'm going to tell you, Mr. Chairman, what it is we're attempting to do in terms of amendments, and it will get the correct agreeable language to you. This that I have is hot off the press, and it really is not quite the language as it ought to be, but let me tell you what it is we're attempting to do. The bill itself was trying to get those who were not paying workman's compensation and were coming on jobs. They're trying to get a contractor then to use that contractor as a policeman, in effect, to try to get at these so-called, quote, independent contractors. That's the case, and that's what's being attempted. And I think I'm actually expressing it a little different than Lott would, but just from my view. But I think it's important that the contractor himself has some degree of protection. That's what we're trying to get at. And there are four points. Well, there are three main points and then one technical amendment. First one is to say that if this occurs, that the subcontractor, in fact, is not carrying unemployment, workman's compensation, that the contractor himself, who does have workman's comp, is not a non-complying employer. Just to say, he's not a non-complying employer. Here is that he may be because of this, because we're now connecting him, the contractor, to the subcontractor, that somehow he may become a non-compliant. Now, there are those who contend that that's not true. In fact, SAFE looks at it that no matter what happens, he is not a non-compliant employer. How will we feel more comfortable if the law says he's not? So nobody disagrees with that. just say in words that he's not a non-compliant. Now, he has to, he, the contractor, has to have coverage, or he becomes non-compliant. But if he has coverage on his own workman, and then has a sub who doesn't, he doesn't automatically become non-compliant. That's number one. Number two, there's a section of the law that we passed this last session in terms of retainage. As a contractor, can only retain 5%. That was one time when the ABC and the Tier Brothers went two different directions, because I'm usually a subcontractor and I know about this retainage business. So I said that a contractor cannot retain more than 5%. The second point, I think these words are fairly close, I want to check them out, but the contractor, being such person, may withhold an amount equal to the cost of providing coverage for workman's compensation benefits for those persons referred to in subsection 1 of the section, which is the subcontractor. So we go on to say that the contractor can retain what would be the premium payments. So we're adding that. The third point is that under the situation as it now would be in the bill, the injured workman could collect both under workman's compensation and also sue a separate suit to the contractor. And so the third amendment would say you can go just to one route, one way. You can't go both ways. That's been agreeable in the intent of what we're trying to do. Those are the three major amendments that we're talking about. The fourth one is a technical amendment. It's actually, if I remember correctly, on the last line of your bill, it describes structure. And it just says structure. I don't have, you have to deal with it somewhere.
Line 19.
It's structure. I'm going to read to you, after of, on your bill, leave the rest of the line and insert improvements to real property. And that's a better definition of what's intended to be structure. I envisioned it differently. I was thinking of construction of houses. Actually, this would mean all kinds of construction work, laying pipe, drainage, sidewalk curbs, streets, you know, all that. That's what it's intended to cover. That's a better definition. That's a technical amendment. Again, that's agreeable to everyone. It's broader. It covers all improvements to real property. So those are the amendments. We are in agreement that those intents should be in the bill. Our problem right now out in the hall is whether or not this language does it. So I'll have to get you the kind of language that, and I will, see if you get it. If it's agreeable to the committee, the kind of language will do that.
Within the construction industry, are there not some people who are legitimate partnerships or sole proprietors who subcontract?
I'm sure that there are. I would say, however, to my knowledge, Senator Rogers, that this particular industry has an awful lot of those who are more or less pseudo subcontractors. And the legitimate ones, I'm sure, are doing all of the things that are legitimate in their industry. They're not the ones that would even become involved in this bill. Because actually, if the subcontractor is a complying employer and is paying workman's comp, he doesn't become involved in this bill in any event. He's already taken care of.
The intent of this bill, the intent 430, and the intent of this is to get at those phony partnerships.
Correct.
Seems to me that this is going the wrong way. We're going to penalize those people who are indeed legitimate contractors, either as a sole proprietor or as a partner, and do not have any other employees. We're going to penalize those people by forcing them to do something that they may not want to do. And I know we've forced a lot of other things, but
well, that's, of course, you answered the question. We do that. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we throw them, if pardon the expression, the net out. And
not a safety net.
Not a safety
okay.
net. And you get a lot more in than you intended. As a matter of fact, that's what 430 did for the slides in that. I can't disagree with you, and yet the only point I'm making is that it's serious enough in this industry that we really ought to pass the law. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but this is quite serious. And
isn't there another way that we can accomplish that without penalizing these people who should not be penalized?
I don't know the answer to that. I think, I guess I'm sensing from what you're saying that you don't disagree with the, what we're attempting to do.
Right?
I don't have another answer.
See, I find there's essentially no difference between this bill and Senate Bill 430. Except that this is narrowed down in scope as to who it applies to.
I agree.
And so this is, if we narrow it down to apply to this group, next session will be narrowing, coming back in and expanding this thing until eventually it'll be back up to where Senate Bill 430 would have taken us.
Well, I hope I'm not here when that happens. It's, I can understand again why you're worried about it. I think the case has to be made, however, in order to do the expansion that you're talking about. I really believe that the case has been well made in terms of the construction industry. I believe it has been. At least it's been to my satisfaction.
Idea that you talked about is the fatigue would be what's holding the premium being in addition to the 5% retained here with it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It'd be above the legal 5%.
Kevin?
Good.
Would you tell me again what that language on line 19 is just suggested, or approximate language?
What do you have to go out there?
Thank you. Thank you.
You referred to the word structure.
On line 18, after the word of, you delete the rest of the line. And you insert improvements to real property.
Improvements to real property?
Right.
Okay.
So, it's actually quite a broad definition. It's much broader a definition than the one that's in the bill.
Two questions that you mentioned retaining and following up on Ted's question. You're saying the 5% plus.
Correct.
Fine. And the other thing is in point number two that you had, and you indicated that there was agreement. We agree now. Who is we?
Well, I've been talking with Pat Randall and Jack Kalinowski, and it's at my request.
Now, under two, you and your Griffin would have to be out of either Griffin's comp or hearing, but not both. Is that correct?
Under the way that these amendments are drafted, that's what I'm looking at right now. And I want to make sure I leave it a little bit loose so that I don't box in anybody that doesn't want to be boxed in because of our conversation. I'm going to read it to you. Actually, what it says is that you go through the fund, to the workman's comp fund. If the person writing the contract pays to the state accident insurance fund the amount required by subsection 2 of this section on behalf of a person who incurs a compensable injury, the person writing the contract is relieved of all other liabilities for that injury to any person entitled to recover damages therefore, meaning he goes through workman comp, and there's no suit outside of workman comp. Third party suit. That's what that says.
That's when he has coverage.
That's when he has coverage.
And then when he doesn't have
coverage. No. You understand under the bill we're dealing with, let's say he doesn't have coverage yet. The employer retains what would amount to a premium for that injured work. In fact, he will have coverage. We're trying to tie the whole thing together. We want to make sure the language does that.
That's the purpose of the retainage?
Pardon?
That's the purpose of the retainage, could you mention?
Yeah. But I have to also say to you that it's my understanding under workman's compensation that the employee is always covered, even if there is no premium paid on him. And then they go after the non-compliant employer to collect. I want to make sure, as I'm sure you do, that the injured workman is not getting in the box somewhere, that he's covered. There's no question that he's covered. The injured workman is covered. All we're trying to do now is to say that because of what we're now doing something different. I'm a subcontractor, you're the contractor. I move on your job. All of a sudden, I become a subject workman of yours. You know, you may not use me again as a subcontractor for a long time. We're changing our relationship, is what we're doing. And all I'm trying to say is the argument is not in relation to the injured workman. That injured workman's going to get compensated. The argument now is between us. You complying, me non-complying, but you're going to be sort of the chief of police over me. We're making you responsible for me. This is what we're doing in this bill. Making you responsible for me. It's a new relationship. Now, if you didn't say anything, I am not an injured workman. I can collect as I can through workman's comp, and I can also make a third-party suit on you. That's a different relationship that we don't. No other employee has, just because of the working of this bill.
But that doesn't in any way, you think, change into the joint supervision control bill that we passed last session?
No. No, I know the bill you're talking about.
181.
I didn't like it, but no, it doesn't.
I worked very hard for it.
No, it doesn't, and I know what you mean, and the legislature made a decision. No, and this is not, I'm not trying to do anything tricky.
The other question I would have that, suppose the subcontractor hires another subcontractor. The relationship would be the same. What I'm thinking of specifically is the plumbing and cooling trades. Well, a plumbing contractor, he doesn't operate his own sheet metal operation. You go ahead and sub out the sheet metal work to another contractor. That would be the relationship then of that subcontractor and subcontractor.
I don't know the answer to that. I guess changing the terminology of the law, you're a subcontractor and you're going to sub further, is what you're saying.
And it's done quite frequently in the plumbing and trade.
I saw a word here, and it's in the section we may change the language of, but I saw a word here that talks about letting the contract. I don't know the answer. But I would ask you, are you writing the contract to your further sub?
Right.
I mean, would that term apply? You have to look at it when you finally get down to the bill. Well, just a minute here. You could read it in there, Glenn. I'm reading both subsections 1 and 2. You better get a lawyer on it, but it looks to me like you could read it in and that in fact would be covered under this law. But yeah, I think you better get a legal opinion. I'm not that sure about that.
Okay.
I didn't consider
that. What's the common question?
I hadn't considered that. I really don't know.
Okay.
Back up.
Now,
it seems to have been a three-way agreement or a conversation with Mr. Randall, Mr. Kalinowski, and Mr. Senator Tia. And I think maybe you want to talk with Mr. Randall if you want to go to that conversation to find out what he had, then you can do that. But
just based on the representation made by Senator Tia, I think that there's some logic in the amendments that are proposed. Of course, we'd like to take a look at the final wording as the senator would, obviously. And so, but I think that my general reaction off the back of the horse would be that they're not bad. I would like to say further that I, for one, am very pleased and appreciative of the remarks that the senator made before this committee, because he's out of the industry. And obviously, the senators and nuts could be, as always, characterized as being fairly independent. Or the organized voting trades were not among his strongest supporters. However, his latest comments on this matter would make us pause to wonder if we did the right thing on it.
Oh, I think I was thought of.
Did you say the agreement? I agree. This is not the Coke Convention.
You don't have to make that plea. You're going to get it out of the
Well,
I just want to ask. Is there ever again going to be anybody that can be an independent subcontractor who will not have to carry workman's comp mandatorily?
An independent contractor by himself?
Or are you talking are the sole proprietor or a partner who will not have to carry workman's comp mandatorily under this bill?
Well, Representative, I can't answer that question. I appreciate you asking somebody with more expertise in the area of who exactly that would. What I am concerned about, Representative, and this bill will address itself to that, is the phony partnership. But when you ask a question of a sole proprietorship, independent one person, I can't respond to that. And I'm not sure, and that's not, in my view, it's not our problem. Our problem is the phony partnerships. And when some people get the feedback when you say partnership. Hey, we have cases of six and seven partners. That's all there is working, but they're six, they're all partners. Well, that's the problem we're trying to get to, and this bill will help us a good deal on that. So as far as the sole proprietor, to be against them would be like to be against motherhood and the flag. We're not against that, but we're trying to rectify another problem.
Yeah, but doesn't this bill say something automatically?
I'm not certain that it does.
Well, it appears to me like there isn't any way for anybody ever to get into the building trades unless they're going to be paid with workman's comp. I mean, there isn't going to be any.
Well, that's going to be the point I'd make with you is that we're all in that ballgame out there. We all have the same risks. We should all have the same general responsibilities to the industry, and that's not so bad. You know, who's going to take care of the? Who's going to take care? Who's going to pay the bills of the guy that's the sole proprietorship that gets hurt? Who pays those bills?
Well, we just had a bill in 2020 which dealt with the independent logging contractor, whom we all agreed that he was going to take care of himself. Now we're back talking about another group of people that you're going to automatically take care of them.
Okay, let me suggest to you, Representative Abel, that the logging industry is somewhat different than the construction industry in that day in and day out, you're out there bidding work. You're competing head to head. There's a matter of fairness that should be addressed. Now, sure, some loggers bid in a sense that they'll bid with a mill or they'll buy stumpies and do this and work it themselves, but the construction industry is they're probably not a more highly competitive business than that one. And it seems to me that if the legislature
is going to impose workman compensation and unemployment and state withholding, taxes. That's a law, too. Then there ought to be some protection for those people that comply with that. But do it because they believe in it, not because you make them do it, maybe, but because they believe in it. Well, they're entitled to some protection. They're entitled to know that whoever they're bidding against has got to pay those things at least too. I think that's fair. Lobbyists don't really have that day in and day out competitive situation. I don't believe. I'm not a logger, but my dad was, and so I think I'm right on that. Have I answered the question?
I guess I think that it covers everybody.
Well, okay, maybe it does.
In the discussion industry.
Yeah, we've got loggers there, and
then we see the day, somebody else tomorrow.
Well, let me say to you that I think that, in all fairness, that we ought to only have to defend the construction industry's involvement in the process, unless somebody else suffers the consequences of defending whatever else comes down the pike.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, I've got
Bill, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you got to go. I got cut off before, and I just was afraid Jerry would get up there and get away before I got back in here. You're involved in the painting portion of the construction industry. Are there not some guys out there who are painters who just one guy or two guys in a real partnership go around and do legitimate painting jobs, and they've been around for a long time, they've got a truck with their name on it, they've got a business address. Aren't there some of those people in the painting industry? They don't hire anybody.
Yes, there are representatives.
And those people will be caught up by this bill.
Representative Rogers, that's right. But the problem is that it's becoming increasingly a problem in the construction industry that the partnerships are put together for the express purpose of avoiding the payment of workman compensation and unemployment. Sure, you're right. There are some people that just of their own free will are out there as entrepreneurs on their own. They want to be by themselves. They want us to leave them the hell alone. But the fact of the matter is that these other folks are causing the problem, which must be solved. It must be solved. And so, yes, we're gonna throw the baby out with the dishwater here a little bit, but the point is that the problem is serious enough. Which Senator Tia said, in his estimation, is justification for this legislation. And I have stronger testimony than that, and because he's been in it a long time. And he doesn't have the axe to grind it. You may look at me and say that I do. But it may be hard for you to believe this concept, but construction unions are somewhat concerned about their industries. And we're concerned about our industries. See, I as a labor representative, I don't bid jobs. But I know what problems our contractors have out there trying to compete with these guys that are set up for the express purpose of avoiding workman compensation, unemployment, state and federal withholding, Social Security. Something must be done about that.
You don't think there's any other way to get at those people other than through this design?
I'd be very interested to hear any suggestions that you would have to make.
Thank you.
I think that what you have to realize is when this person gets injured on the job, whether it's an independent contractor, quote, or some partnership, or whatever you want to call it, somebody has to pay. Right?
Either he or someone
has to pay. All right, then it becomes a burden, either it becomes a burden upon society. And I think that these people should have to pay their fair share. It's just fair share all over again.
But there are many of these people who are in business for themselves who have taken care of themselves through a private insurance program or whatever, and so they're not going to become a burden upon anybody.
And we're catching them up the same place there.
Thank you. Mr. Hall?
Mr. Head Attorney, Marvin Hall with the Oregon State Council of Carpenters. Gentlemen, do you want to let you know that we strongly support this bill? Not having seen the amendments, it didn't sound too bad, but then I'm like everyone else. I would like to cite a couple instances that I have ran across. I'm not going back 6 months. Oh, I'm not going back 2 years. I'm going right back now, and I'll go to Washington County. Senator IQ is there. A $1.5 million job. It's apartments, 30 people working on the job, 7 2-man partnerships, 2 3-man partnerships, 1 4-man partnership. No single employee on that job, no one covered on that job with any workman's compensation. Much less not paying some of the taxes, but that's another area that takes somebody else's problem. If any one of these people had been injured on that job, he would have been properly taken care of by workman's compensation. These partners are partners because they must be to obtain the work. They could not pay the premium, that's why they're not covered. There are legitimate contractors that's out there. These are not the... These people could not pay the premium, that's why they're not covered. One young man went to work on that job, just completed 18 months of community college training in carpentry. The first day on the job, he was told that he needed a steel saw. It cost him $115, and the contractor handed him the steel saw. The second day on that job, when he came on that job, he was given a piece of paper in which to sign. He said, "What's this?" He said, "You sign this here paper, give me $85, I'll get you registered as a contractor with the state of Oregon." Now, we know that's not the way it happens, but this is what this young man was told. This man went to the job seeking employment. He could gain employment only when he became a contractor. Reason? To beat the taxes and workman's comp. Gentlemen, I could duplicate what you've just done here with remodeling this Capitol building without one single employee on the job covered under workman's comp. Not one. And that's what's happening in the industry today. You find 13 people, all partners. And there is no way that we have been able to see, because we have looked to try to protect the legitimate contractor. But this man, if he's going to work in the industry, and if he does get injured, and if he's covered himself under some other insurance, he no longer has to cover under that other insurance. So we're not double-dipping him. He can get out of that and get covered into this here. There is a way to do this through the insurance. This man becomes a social burden on the rest of the people that are paying their fair share. And in order to protect the industry from the unscrupulous contractor, and he is unscrupulous, or the builder, who says, "I'm going to sub this out, sub that out, and sub this out, and I will testify and go with you in any area you want to go to," that the builder that is using these phony subs charges the same amount for the resident that he is building when you go to buy it, because I can show him through you side by side after street after street, and the comparative price is not there because of the sub. The quality that's built into them is what's going to make the price. The subbing does not make housing cost anymore. This job out in Washington County had I believe it was 14 fourplexes on the job. Those fourplexes were sold before all of them, 14 were sold before the first one was done. All of them were built by these people that were not covered under workman's compensation. And the carpenters, we do have quite a few accidents. We're not one of the most hazard by a long ways, but that we do need the coverage. And these people that are seeking this employment in the industry are not contractors. They don't have tax numbers. The builder's board, to prove a point, the builder's board went on this job and in one day issued 29 violations under the builder's registration law in the state of Oregon. 29 violations on one day issued on that one particular job. So these people are the ones that need the protection. The industry needs protection. A legitimate contractor out here no longer can compete when you can beat him by not covering yourself by workman's compensation. And gentlemen, you're covered by workman's compensation under the state. But you would not have to be covered, or of course you made your own laws to protect yourself, which you should have. But if you went together and was going to do the same job that you're doing now and said, no, we're going to call ourselves all subs, we do not need to now cover ourselves. You could obviously then bid for the job for less money. I don't think you would, but that's what's happened in the industry. And it is a very serious threat to the industry. And it needs correction. Originally, when the law started out, employers were just exactly that. And when a man subbed, he was a legitimate man. When the law was originally drawn up, was given the option to the employer. It was a fair law, and it was a just law. But we now have found that it's so easy to beat the system simply by calling myself a contractor. All I have to get become a contractor is take $30, go down here and register, put up the bond, $3,000 bond, and get myself some business cards. That's all it requires in the state to be contracted. But by just doing that, I can beat the system. And when we all beat the system, we've got a real problem, because we're real close to anarchy, because we've got no policemen or no firemen or the rest of us.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
I want to know, Mr. Hall, that I think that most of us here are subcontractors, but the general public, who is the general contractor,
somewhere in your statement, you implied that any legitimate contractor is going to have workman's compensation. Or to turn it around with the having the workman's compensation covered makes him a legitimate contractor. Now, did I misunderstand you?
I do use the word legitimate contractors. There are what I consider a legitimate contractor. I consider a man a legitimate contractor when he's properly paying his taxes and properly registered and doing the work. I believe that this bill will force this man to be covered under workman's compensation as I read it. And I certainly don't have the wisdom that you people have been able to garner together here through reading this bill. Yes, I think that this man will be covered. And there are fair, equitable contractors that out there that do bid, that do work independently. But there's no way that sole proprietorship, because I can build a house with the same number of people they were doing out there and calling themselves partners, but simply saying that I'm building this wall, he's building that wall, we build this wall, and as far as we're dividing the money, we're going to divide it up because we equally did it as sole proprietorship. Unless you have everyone covered, just by calling a man a contractor, a partner, a sole proprietor, I see no way to cover it out. I drove down here 56 miles an hour today. I violated the law. I was very careful because I had a white car all the way. Private escort. I may be a very safe driver at 70. But the law says that I will drive 55 miles an hour, and I think that's how laws are made. They don't exclude me because I'm 6 feet tall, or 5 feet 10, or 4 feet. I think that the laws must cover everyone, and I think a man working on the job needs coverage so that he does not become social burdens to the rest of us. And I feel that this man, paying his insurance, the workman's compensation, I'm not arguing race because we all have different rates, but all of these people presently are now being covered when they have an accident. There is no damn way for Safe to go out and collect the compensation or the money back from the contractor because he hasn't got it. But if you brought the man letting the contract, now you're giving Safe something that Safe can go out and they can do their job. And they've got a place to get the money. And they need a stick. And you haven't given them a very big stick down there. And I disagree with them most of the time, but I happen to agree they need a stick.
Yeah. The people who are involved in these phony partnerships are already violating the law. Is that correct?
No.
Why not?
Because I have an option to cover myself. It's an option. I may cover myself if I will.
No.
Want to.
No.
I do not have to.
There are some definitions of employer-employee relationship.
Well,
and so that's what I'm saying. If there is an employer-employee relationship, and in that relationship, that employee is not being covered, that's a violation of the present law. Is that correct?
An employee on construction must be covered, yes.
That's correct. So there's a violation of the law right now under that situation.
No, because partners are not employees.
No, there's supposed to be an employer-employee relationship. If there is that employee relationship, that man's got to be covered.
So, if I could give you an example, I know of one in Coos Bay. There's a Ramadan and carpet lane for them. And I think there are 8 or 9 of them. And they all are into a partnership. They all have their contractor's license up on the board and the group like that. But actually, as far as getting the jobs and functioning, they function as one organization with everybody as an employee. That's the way it actually operates. But it's set up legally. It's set up as a partnership with all these people being independent contractors, and they get out of the whole thing. And I think what you're asking is a factual question. If in fact they are in that employer-employee relationship, would they not be circumventing the law? And the answer to that is yes. But the problem is if they're allowed to have an independent license as a contractor that's set up in a partnership, and you can't prove the independent, the employer-employee relationship. And what they're after is that these guys now go out and they contract with all the other subcontractors, and they do not fit in their fixed cost for workman's comp because they're not required to pay it. Now, where they're getting caught more in what you're asking is in the unemployment area, because that's what they've been hassling over with the unemployment division, because the unemployment division has been picking those people up where the workman's comp has not. And I guess if there was a factual analysis of it, if in fact there is an employer-employee relationship, you're right, they would probably be covered, but I don't think they're ever going to prove it.
Well,
the way they've got it set up.
Yeah, I can see the pin on this thing. If this bill is adopted, and it's not going to solve the problem, because that independent contractor will reluctantly pay the workman's comp. But he may bid his job at 50 cents an hour less for his own work than the other guy. Now, the next piece of legislation is that they will all have to bid at the same rate per hour. And aren't they just leaving one thing on the other? And I'm really offended by this kind of legislation.
Well, I think that what we're after within it is to see that everybody that's working on the job
is properly covered, so that they will be covered, I would hate to have you operating a proper business up here, and then I would come along here and I'd get some people, and we work for less money, and I think that that's our option, that we used to work for less money. But I feel that we should be properly protected under the law so that if we're injured, that my crew should not become a burden on your crew, that your crew should not have to take care of my crew because we didn't want the coverage. You're independent as hell. You're from an area that has a lot of independent people. And I think that there's independent people all over. These people have a right to be independent. But by the grace of Hannah, when they've got a problem in Great Lakes, they're down to the county hospital. And I'd hate like the devil to have to stand in front of them and tell them they couldn't get food stamps when they qualify under the law to get the food stamps. I don't think that your crew should be having to pay for my crew over here because we're free spirits. I think that my crew should be able to provide for themselves so they don't become a social burden, and everybody properly covered will protect that social burden away from their crew.
No, I think what you said, one more statement, and that we are totally taking away the right of people to direct their own lives, and if an individual wants to do something on his own, we are taking that away from it. And along with that goes assuming the
On your line of thinking, though, suppose that this same person, you're assuming that he's going to become a social burden, and I haven't seen any statistics yet of how many people have become social burdens of anybody, number one. Number two, if this individual wants to go out and buy private insurance via the route of buying hospitalization and disability insurance, and he doesn't feel that he needs all of this compensation that we're passing down here, and the rate's too high, why shouldn't he be able to make this case? I'm in the insurance industry, and I find more and more people who are either corporate officers or private entrepreneurs or are in partnership who are giving up workman's compensation, who are buying hospitalization and are buying the benefits that they want out of disability income, and telling somebody to take the workman's comp rate and keep it. And I think we've priced ourselves completely out of the market in the contractor trade, and I now see that the contractor trade is taking their rate up this time, has got an average rate of 30% increase. I think to see people out of choice. And I don't think they're going to become a social burden.
Well, I think that we have a three-way bill that we passed a long time ago. And this allows insurance companies, I can come to you and buy my workman's compensation from you. I do not have to go down and buy it from State. So all I'm saying that I should have to provide the insurance, and I may buy it from you. I may choose to buy it from you. I think right now today I'd tell you I would buy it from you if you're something. But, and I think that you are going to be good.
I've talked about the two-way bill with the existing number.
So I don't think that we're saying that they must run down and take safe coverage. We're not saying that. We're simply saying that
it's not true. I'm not talking about working stop. I'm talking about there is another way to cover yourself, and that is, it doesn't have anything to do with workman's compensation. You can cover yourself through a combination of Blue Cross and OPS and disability income. And because of the rate that you have on workman's comp, you're finding, and I think you're going to find, an increasing number of people, because workman's comp rates have become so high that they're going to try and circumvent it.
Okay.
you're going to miss it. I understand my colleagues invite a representative Rogers whenever you talk about coverage, and he gets excited about things like that. And as the author of the Lane County Unity Argus, whenever you start talking about coverage, he'll react. Because he thinks people should all be covered.
That's what I'm saying, they should all be.
These pictures were taken, by the way, I'm Gary Goodwin, Portland District Council of Carpenters Business Representative. I have been for the past 4 years. I've been a carpenter since 1949, and I'm here to testify on what's happening in the construction industry. I'll read from my text here, and then I'll describe these pictures to you. This is the same testimony that was given before the Senate committee. The testimony has been given in the past to committees in regarding workers' compensation insurance coverage. Itself, it seems to me that people don't seem to care. They don't seem to believe that the legitimate contractor is being forced out of business. Again, I use the word legitimate contractor. We would like to make a sincere effort to convince this committee that there are thieves out there in the real world. What we were referring to earlier is a contractor with 6 employees, and there are not many of them left in the construction industry, in the residential field in particular, who were paid last year some $14,000 in workers' compensation premiums on his employees. The sum is based currently on the 13% of payroll insurance for workers' compensation. The same contractor can call these employees subcontractors, pay them in cash, still get the same margin of profit, putting an additional $14,000 in his pocket from his workman's compensation savings that he did not have to pay, let alone Social Security contributions, unemployment insurance, and so forth. The pictures that I've submitted, Damon, were taken in a one-day stint before we appeared before the Senate Labor Committee, and Mr. Hall and myself grabbed the camera and went out and did it, and they came down and testified on Memorial Day. The number one picture you look at is a two-man partnership in Newburgh, subcontracting the floor, post, and beaming system. Now that's after the foundation has been placed in. On that same project, a two-man partnership, subcontracting the framing. This is the outside walls with the siding inside. The same truck in Newburgh, a two-man partnership with doing the roof system. This is all in literally the same house down there. This man's doing the framing here, the floor system, the framing here, and they come back and they keep doubling up. The other picture, number four, is Washington County off of 185th, where the two-man partnership became upon framing the house. Two-man partnership. The other one, we ran over to King City, there was a two-man partnership, again, post and beaming the floor. Number six was a three-man partnership in Washington County, off of 185th. Picture number seven is a three-man partnership putting on all the siding on a $2 million job in Clackamas County. It's a pretty large construction job. Two-man partnership. Picture number eight was a two-man partnership doing all the finish work on a $3 million project in Multnomah County on Barnes Road. It's still under construction. If anybody's there to go and look at it. Picture number nine is on Barber Boulevard, a $2 million project. All phases from the foundation to the roof system to the finish was done by subcontractors. I'm saying illegal subcontractors under my definition. These are partnerships doing work. Picture number 10, a single siding job. As was the interior finish, sub to partnerships in Clackamas County. Picture number 11 is the one that Mr. Hall referred to earlier.
$500,000 project in Washington County off of 185th and Sunset Highway. 35 citations were issued by the Builders Board. Real estate license. No IRS account number. No Social Security account number. No TriNet account number, which comes with your tax account number. And 35 sole proprietorships and partnerships on this one project. It's rather grim testimony. I have been out in the field, as what I say is in the real world. I have worked as a carpenter for an employer all my adult life. I've enjoyed working under those conditions. As Mr. Hall testified, it's no good thing for my current employer to call me a subcontractor, even the I am a business representative now at what I'm doing now and save a big chunk of money. And as Representative Rogers said a few minutes ago, you're going to throw a net out and you're going to catch a lot of people. The insurance coverage, whether it be through state or independent insurance agents, is the key to the whole program. If you're a legitimate contractor, you are going to be covered. You're not going to take the chance of getting hurt on a construction site. Just as you, I'm sure all of you have automobile insurance to drive down that highway. You don't have to have it. But you do because you want to protect yourself and the person that you might get hit from a lawsuit. What we're asking is equitable treatment for our legitimate contractors in the state of Oregon. And I think this bill would put them on a competitive basis. It will not raise the cost of housing. It will probably cut down the margin of profits from the illegal contractors. But it's something that must be stopped. This may not be the true answer, but it's got to be stopped. Or pretty soon, there's not going to be a legitimate employee in the state of Oregon. And I'm not kidding, gentlemen. This has happened in the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years in this area in the construction industry. And it's just like wildfire, it's spreading like crazy. We have talked to the people in the state income tax division, and they finally believe us. Unemployment people are beginning to believe us. They're taking the cases, they're checking them out, they're finding out what we're saying is true. There are millions of dollars out there being lost to workers' compensation. The remarks was made a short while ago, the premiums keep going up. I agree with you, the premiums in workers' compensation are skyrocketing because it's getting so that nobody's paying anymore. When you get the same coverage and nobody's paying in, you have to raise the rates of those without paying. I think it's a choice. As Mr. Hall said, I would certainly get a use of coverage on a construction job if I could get it at a less rate. Our theory is, and I know it's far-fetched, but if there's more people paying, the rates should stabilize themselves or even possibly come down. In the Portland area, as little as 2 years ago, we had over 6,500 companies working in my organization. Today, we're down to 4,500. The majority of those 2,000 that are absent now are out there calling themselves subcontractors. How long is it going to go on? We're asking and urging you to support this bill.
Thank you, Jerry. Mr. Chairman, I built a house in 1970, and I made a list of the things. The excavation was done by an individual who owned his own bulldozer and equipment, did not have any employees. The foundation was done by employees, and all of this was done on a bid basis, every bit of it. Done by employees of a company. The framing was an employer-employee. The sheetrock was done by employees of a company. Carpet, linoleum, and tile by employees of a company. Plumbing was done by an individual and his son. The electrical work was done by an individual who is one of a brother partnership. The heating and gutters, the sheet metal work was done by an individual with a son.
roofing was done by an individual, the weather stripping was done by an individual, the cabinets were done by employees. Now, some of these people who were individuals then now have larger companies and have employees. And under this bill, I would have had to provide workman's compensation for all these people unless they individually provided it for themselves.
No, contractors, that would be correct.
Okay, that's right. That's what I'm telling. I want you to read Bill 6 and 7, where it says, if any person engaged in a construction business, you are not engaged in a construction business, and you wouldn't be covered by it. But now, if you hold yourself out as Rogers Construction Company, and you're building your own home, you got a problem.
What year was this for Representative Rogers?
1970.
1970.
Mm-hmm.
In 1970, that house had approximately 11 subcontractors, as you stated there.
Yeah.
Today, on that same house.
With all the checks I wrote, I must be missing a couple of things.
Today, that very same house, Representative Rogers, you would find over 21 so-called, quote-unquote, subcontractors on that very same house. And this is a fact. I deal in it every day.
Why would I find that one?
23% payroll taxes and insurance that you as an employer used to pay out to your people, your employees sitting around this room. Today, you don't pay 23%. You call yourself a contractor. Each person sitting at this table is now a subcontractor. You are saving the 23% payroll taxes, insurance, and overhead that you used to pay out as your own employee. But still, you're getting the same service from the individuals by them calling themselves subcontractors. They are excluded from the law because I am a subcontractor. I am a subcontractor. I do not have to pay these payroll taxes, insurance. It's a heck of a thing to say, but it is the fact of life.
The company that did the foundation work, company that did the sheetrock work, company that did the carpet, linoleum, and tile, the plumbing, the heating and gutters, the electrician, the roofing, I don't know about the weather stripping, the cabinets, and I forgot about the insulation, I knew there were more, they're still in. Those people are still in business today with employees, and those people report to a central place every day and control, and they're employees in every sense of the word. And I'm sure that there's no way that those employees could circumvent that. But they are not
citizens. No. Again, Senator, you're referring to the legitimate contractors. The owner of that company that you're referring to undoubtedly, without question, has insurance on himself because of the fact he is a legitimate contractor. If you are a legitimate contractor, you will protect yourself and your family, your environment, by having insurance on yourself. If you're legitimate, you'll be there.
No, the employer doesn't have to have insurance on himself.
No, he is an employer.
Even though he may be still working on the job site himself, he does not have to cover himself now.
This is true.
He has to cover any employees.
I would like to offer a challenge that if he is working on a job site, I'll bet you he has some sort of insurance to cover himself in case something happened, whether it be workman's comp or not.
Private hospital.
These people I'm referring to, representatives, have absolutely nothing and they're calling themselves contractors.
How do you know they don't have individual hospitalization, life insurance, and disability coverage?
How do I know it's raining outside? I'm in the field. The people that we have checked out, representatives, do not have IRS numbers. One case, and I will not use a name because this is probably record, but I testified the day before yesterday. has not paid a nickel's worth of income tax since 1973. The IRS is very interested in this gentleman. These are the people we're trying to capture in this net. We're not out to get anybody else. If you want to, I don't believe in amendments, but you say, all right, accept legitimate contractors. That would be a fantastic amendment. I would accept that in a minute.
We'll work
to find a legitimate contractor.
We'll work on that.
It is snowballing and it's out of proportion. Representative Greenquist area out there in Milwaukee, I'm very familiar with. These pictures and these pictures are all over this five county area that we represent.
Mr. Dean?
Yes.
You gave us an example of this one project. I forget what you said, it was in Multnomah or Clark.
What section is that?
I don't remember which section, but you mentioned that the project involved 35 sole proprietorships and or partnerships on this one job. No social security, no unemployment, no time at, no
security
holding.
That's correct.
Some of these things, well, maybe they could escape, but there isn't any way they could escape an income tax, whether it's withheld or whether it's just a declaration of income in that taxable year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if the IRS is investigating that?
One of the people that I just referred to happened to be a subcontractor on this particular job. He had not filed income tax or anything since 1973. We reported to the IRS this finding, this factual finding, to the IRS people, and also to the workers' compensation people. They were very cooperative. They went out there. They issued these citations. They're understaffed. I know they're understaffed. We're in the field every day. We have five people in our area that are in the field every day. We complain when we come across things. And this is not only union or non-union contractors, but we have a union contractor in the IRS people as well because he was doing exactly the same thing. If everybody is paying their fair share of insurances, IRS members are TriNet tax up in our area. And we're bidding on a base equal basis. And then again, overhead and profit becomes the margin of getting a contract. Not how much you can beat the system, then you're going to have the situation stop. But you've got to have a base to work from. If I'm paying my fair share of workman's comp insurance and the man next to me is not, you know darn well who's going to get that project.
Any other questions, Mr. Goodwin? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is Gordon Mr. Goodwin?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gordon Van Antwerp, field representative for the Painting and Decorating Contractors Association of America. Our people are certainly concerned with the problem that does in fact exist. There's very little that I could add to the testimony that's already been given. However, as demonstration of proof, I would suggest the review of some of the cases that have in fact been investigated by the Compliance Division of the Workman's Compensation Board. I was in the office of the director a short time back. There was a list, or I should say a sheaf of papers, each one of which represented a separate or different case. I was privy to the top one, which contained some 19 court employees, which were not covered at all. I respect their activity in pursuing this. However, it doesn't, the present law does not completely address the problem. I would certainly concur, at least tentatively, in the proposal that Senator Atiyah made here with respect to Senate Bill 462. I believe that this tracks in the correct direction. Our membership is comprised of sole proprietors, partnerships, and corporations. All of our members who work with the tools of the craft on the job site are covered either by SAFE or by a private insurer. And my people resent very highly, and very realistically so, those that attempt to circumvent coverage that do not provide it for their employees and indeed make a sham of the law itself. Mr. Chairman, my parking meter is about due. I'm going to cut it off at this point.
All right.
I appreciate your attention.
Any questions that run out with?
Thank you very much.
Not fun. Take that meter. And we got a really good deal out there. I think you get nickel for a half hour, an hour for a dime, and two or three times that much money, you get another 30 minutes.
Well, I hope I don't have a yellow tag.
Thank you, dear.
Thanks very much.
This damsel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Robert Stansel. I represent the Oregon State Board of Construction Trades Council. You've heard ample testimony this morning regarding Senate Bill 462. Therefore, I won't go into details on it, other than to say that the State Board of Construction Council endorses the trust that you will give a DPAS recommendation to this bill. As far as the amendments that Senator Pierce put in, we don't find no big quarrel with him. I would like to go over number one amendment that he made. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that was if a subcontractor was not in compliance, that would not make the general contractor in non-compliance. I think maybe if that general contractor is put in a position, possibly, that he might be in non-compliance, he would see to it that he got a subcontractor that was in compliance. Other than that, I just hope that, because this is a very important deal to the construction industry, not just to the cotton manufacturer, but to the workers, the sheet metal workers, and right on down the line, this nation, all of them. So, with that, thank you for allowing me to talk about it.
Yes, Representative. Bob, it seems to me that this actually is a legitimate concept that more than it is.
As I mentioned to you before in my testimony before the Senate, this is really an employer's bill. However, it was introduced by the organizers of LCIO at the State Building Trade Council's request, which came from the company's district council. The way we feel about it, the contractor that is employing our people and paying either to an insurance company or SAFE, and paying all his bills currently, he is being gradually forced by underbidding practices in the industry. And presume we won't have anybody do all of them will be contractors. We won't have anybody to send to the contractors if it keeps going.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah. Yeah.
Senator Rogers. OIS 656.052 is mandate coverage for an employee. The penalty for a violation of that specifically is a fine of not less than $25 nor more than $100. And each day in which there is a violation constitutes a separate offense. Now, there is a penalty for a violation of the present law. Now, the penalty may not be adequate, but it goes into the fact that if someone has an employee working fine, you must provide the coverage. Now, this is happening. there's no debate on that point. There are people who have employees who are not providing the coverage by any genuine definition of the employee. And why do we have to have this bill, 462, instead of strengthening this penalty provision?
Very well, Roger. It's not the contractor that has the employee, but I think that this Bill 462 relates to it to the so-called employee who makes himself a contractor. So if you and I go into the partnership, are you my employer, or are you the employer?
Now, if we're in a legitimate partnership, you and I go into a partnership to do something, and it's a legitimate partnership, you and I do all the work, and we contract, that's a legitimate partnership. And you and I then should have the choice of whether we are going to have to be covered under workman's comp or whether we can have other coverage or no coverage at all.
But are we employees or are we contractors?
We are contractors in that situation. We are not employees.
If
I'm looking for an employee and you come to me looking for a job and I say to you, the only way you can have the job is to sign this thing that says you are now a partner and I'm going to pay you $6 an hour or whatever it is, that's a phony partnership, and there should be a heavy penalty. So this happened.
Let me give you an illustration of what happens in one other state. I'll take the Griffin. Griffin contractors, as a whole, hire employees to do all their work. They're specialists in the Griffin industry. They would be asphalt cleaners. Some of these contractors will hire an employee and work on a hot roof today, and naturally he's being covered. Tomorrow, that contractor might send him out on a small house, a couple days. They will put that on by the square rather than by the hour. And he will pay them, say, maybe $100 or $150 a piece to rent that house. Well, they're contractors on Wednesday, but Friday, they will go eat during the hustle. So, this will take care of that kind of a situation, too.
It takes care of a lot more situations than just that.
But I think the benefit will be much more beneficial than the music.
I'm Bob.
How are you? Pretty good, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Mr. Jeff Kalinowski. Jeff, the senior appeal was in with the amendment, and it's going to talk to that. Okay. The bill's going to have to be set for another hearing, public hearing, because of the amendment. They haven't been presented to the committee, but as soon as it's presented, I will have them circulated to all the people that signed up. Bob, if you'd have everyone leave their name and address with the clerk, that as soon as the amendment that Senator Thiel was talking about had been drafted, I will seriously send to each of you in Portland. So if you leave your number address as well, I'll do it that way. I've got an out-of-town witness on another bill.
I'm just going to make a comment and a brilliant suggestion.
I'm going to start having you testify first, because you must be getting an inferiority complex. But every time you come before the committee, I'm always saying, Jack, next time,
I don't have an inferiority complex, Mr. Chairman. My first comment was going to be, I'm the only one signed up to the bill, so that guarantees passage of it.
It's heavily weighted in the other state.
Yes, I see that. Well, Mr. Chairman, I simply wanted to answer Representative Otto's question of Senator Tia, the subcontractors kind of thing. Under the terms of this bill, as I understand it, Representative Otto, the subcontractor one, the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractor, would be the person letting the contract be subcontractor two. That subcontractor would be responsible then. Second thing, Mr. Chairman, my brilliant thought, which occurred to me during while listening to this.
Let me get back to
I've only had one today.
Well, anyway, you said the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractor would be the, in this case, the crime, the food thing, right?
Yes.
What about the crime above the crime?
He would not be involved. This is the person letting the contract under the terms of the bill as it's now worded.
Okay, the crime led to another subcrime, and that subcrime led to a subcontract.
Yeah.
They're all covered.
The crime, if the subcontractor subs out work, like you described, then that subcontractor would be the one who would be liable, but the prime would not be.
All right.
Brilliant thought. If the problem is simply the bill creates a problem that Senator Tia has addressed, the amendments I know you're going to consider. If the problem is the sole proprietors, partners, and officers of corporations who are doing this kind of thing, then it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that the problem could be very simply solved by going into 656.027, subsection 7, and which defines who is not required to have workers' compensation coverage. And in this case, it says sole proprietors, partners, and officers of corporations. And then I would think you could simply add the words, except those engaged in the construction industry. That in effect would make sole proprietor partnership or officers of corporations who are laboring on a construction project non-complying employers if they do not provide workers' compensation coverage for themselves or their employees. That would narrow the thing down so it doesn't cover the whole gamut and create problems for the general contractors. So that's all I wanted.
So if it's going to take a moment, sir, I imagine you're going to have a role in this thing, Senator Tia and Pat Randall. So I'll set it up probably as soon as possible. Yeah. That's what I said it again Friday morning, right now.
Yeah, I asked you a great question.
Great idea, sir. Hey, also.
Jack, in the city,
in the France,
I have
I've seen job cities and when paving contractors on the job. And then I also see a lot of different trucks. Are these trucks individually owned, and are these people calling themselves independent contractors?
Often they are individually owned, and they are owner-operated trucks. And they would be independent contractors, and
they would have the opposite to carrying workers' comp
under the bill and under the amendment.
Now
they are not required.
Under the bill, they would be required.
Yes, they would be required.
Jack, thank you very much. Bob Kennedy has signed up, but Bob, I'm going to wait and hold off until you see the amendments and you come back down again. I have an out-of-town witness on 701. I'm going to close the hearing at 462. It will be set again for a public hearing again Friday morning, so that we'll have the amendments by then. If you want to do it that way, Bob, that'd be fine. If I get them today, I will see that you get them to the, in the mail, so you probably... Okay, why don't you do that? want to do that. Okay. I'm going to close the hearing on 462. I'd like to open the hearing on Senate Bill 701. Mr. Frank Jackson.
My name is Frank Jackson. I represent Firefighters Local 851 in the city of Eugene, Oregon. I'd like to urge your careful consideration of Senate Bill 701. There is a question that has arisen in Senate Bill 701 as amended by the Senate. The last sentence, I believe, on the amendment indicates medical evidence or other kinds, and I don't know what they mean by other kinds. There's a concern that we have in Eugene that other kinds may be a Wyatt Earp approach for somebody shooting from the hip in order to force court application, court appearances for an injured workman under the heart section of the firefighter law. We have an additional concern in the city of Eugene, and it's documented. If the committee wishes to see the documentation, I can arrange that. Under the block form 801, an 801 form is the form you fill out when you are injured in an occupational law. And it says, under the employer section, do you have any reason to doubt the validity of this claim? And the employer, fire department administrator, sees in the city of Eugene has checked no. They checked the box no, they have no reason to doubt it. It then goes to the personnel office, and that is scratched out, and they write a big question mark. They don't say that they doubt the validity, but that question mark automatically goes to the investigators. Subsequently, then the claim is always denied, and you have to go through the hearings appeal, then the courts, and except in the meantime, a person is off the job for 6 months to 12 to 14 months. He's out of sick leave. He's off the state industrial. And he can be without remuneration in that period of time. And because of this, we would I would urge your serious consideration of Senate Bill 701, but I would urge careful consideration of the amendment as amended in the Senate on that last sentence, because it may be a Wyatt Earp approach.
Okay. Frank, I read that, and I have the same concern of what it means.
All right.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to set the bill back up for Friday morning and do it.
Okay, if the committee is interested in the evidence that I have, and I'm talking about the actuator one form, I'll be glad to provide that for you if you wish.
Okay.
This happened more than once. It happens in every single case where a firefighter is injured in a heart and lung bed in the city of Eugene. He works for the fire department.
First it's no, and then it's crossed out and question mark. What they do is a procedural matter. It just shifts the burden on the firefighter right now to come in with the medical evidence that he has incurred it, and they're not going to admit it at any time. And so it is somewhat difficult to prove, and they're not going to admit that that could possibly happen unless the firefighter himself can prove it.
That's correct. And the burden would shift to the other side that way, and we feel that we'd eliminate, or at least tend to eliminate, the necessity of this person being off work that period of time. Yeah, obviously, it would also help if the system would speed it up some, but
it eliminates the presumption under the statute. I believe
we would accept that.
Thank you, Frank. I want for the committee, we're going to session at 10 o'clock. The bills that are scheduled today. Except 301, I won't put back on the agenda Friday. It appears to me that I've gone through this list, and just about all the bills that are in the committee that are going to be worked on, to my knowledge, at this particular time, and I hope no one takes offense to for some reason that there isn't a bill. I told yesterday that the committee appeared to have about 16 bills left that will be acted upon, and most of them, as you know, are workers' compensation bills. There were only two bills that I had in mind that were House bills that were still here. It wasn't that they were going to be sent out there. There wasn't comp hospitals that could be incorporated into one of the center bills. So you see the agenda, which is fairly close to what we've had and elected to do in the committee. And in the next week, I don't think they are intending to try to get the whole thing taken care of at that time. Anything else coming forth to me? Hearing none, adjourned.